This is that other sports shit. Let's go.
Folks, ladies and gents, once again, you are hanging out with Jason and Jesse of That Other Sports Show. We're doing it again. We got sports takes for you for the next probably hour to hour and a half. And I promise, you know, we don't do things exactly like everyone else. We have a little bit more fun with our show. So we're going to start off with some boxing stuff. Jason's the boxing connoisseur, so I'm going to let him run with that. We're going to move swiftly from the boxing into some mixed martial arts stuff. We got the UFC 294 card coming up. It's a pretty big main card. And if you pay attention to the show, we hardly ever drop into the prelims, okay? So we're going to stick basically. It's a grip. But we will hit on takes for the main card. Obviously, we'll give you betting odds, things like that. That's how we roll, man. We try to share the love and make you guys a little bit of cash. From UFC card this weekend coming up, we also move to this Sunday coming up, NFL Week 7 action. Lots of goofy-ass shit going on in the NFL. I don't know, man. It's definitely not scripted, I can tell you that, because I don't think that teams planned on losing to other teams this weekend. And, you know, there's no one that could make me sign a contract that would make me want to lose to some of these teams. We'll talk about all the upsets. We'll talk about the upcoming games and give you bets, pick'ems, and you know, maybe even throw on some fantasy odds here and there every now and then. But without further ado, let me introduce to you my guy, Mr. Jason Valdez.
It's a pleasure to be back. Shout out to Justin Von Doom for checking in last week. Good to talk to him. Good to see he's doing well. Shout out Smash Squad MMA. Shout out our boys at Variety. Shout out to Fatboy Fadeaway Sports. I see they're branching out. I see a lot of hoop shows that are coming around. Jess, we'll get to hoops eventually here.
Ooh, you know, hoops is getting here, man.
We'll do like a pick'em show at some point here before the real tip off. We'll pick some winners. We'll do like the top eight according to Vegas, and we'll go from there. But we got time. We got time. There's a lot of NFL to jump into. Again, we just want to show love to our people. Jess, it's a pleasure to be back. What is this, week 7?
Yeah, up to week 7.
We're at that point. You know, we talked about it a few weeks ago. I feel like you can eliminate 20 teams. 22 teams from true Super Bowl contention. But now we're reaching a weird point where it's like, are injuries already going to factor into teams in a major way already, but then moving into November and December? So we're getting hairy. Jess, I wanted to start with a little bit of a boxing take here. I'm sure you've read the news. Showtime Boxing is out of the game. They're out of the boxing game. They've been broadcasting boxing since, I want to say, the early 90s, maybe the late 80s. I'm sure there's some article you can pull up that shows they've been broadcasting since the late 80s. But, Chess, we're at a weird stalemate right now when it comes to boxing, because you and I, we're older cats, and we grew up with the major premium networks providing us boxing, right? You had HBO Boxing and you had Showtime Boxing. And HBO Sports, you know, late 80s, early 90s, they had real sports, but their true catalyst, if you will, it was the boxing. It was Lampley. It was Merchant. They had Foreman in there. They had Foreman boxing and doing commentary. Like, it was just a legendary time. But now the premium networks are no longer offering boxing. Showtime is announced that they're folding them up. And we're at a weird stand. I don't know. We're at line in the sand, stalemate. It's in a weird gray area with what's going to happen with the future of boxing. And, you know, Jess, I haven't seen a lot of the boxing is dead articles. I see a lot of, like, the dunking on the appropriate people, right? Like Steven Espinosa is getting dunked on left and right. You know, the Showtime people are getting dunked on left and right. And it's difficult these days to get that you want premium fighters, but you don't want to pay them what they're asking for. And that's that might be the true stalemate. That might be why HBO walked away. That might be why Showtime ultimately walked away. But what I'm wondering here, Jess, is how, because, you know, I tweeted this out yesterday. We're going to talk about the problems, but we'll have no solution. And I mean, if I don't have one, I'm guessing you don't. Maybe I'm shortchanging you here, my guy. Maybe you're going to be like, fuck you, I got the answers.
The light bulb's already on, brother. I got this problem solved.
I reached out to the great Rick Glazer, who's just an incredible follow on Twitter, and I asked him, how do you fix this solution? And he replied, it's too much info to tweet in one tweet. Like, it's just too much. And I'm not sure if it's the middleman gets less, right? Promoters get less. You know, your Mayweather boxings and your Top Ranks and your Arums and those guys get less of a chunk, which you know, I'm sure fighters would love, but that's not what they're negotiating in their contracts. I'm not sure if there is going to be a network. I keep hearing Amazon. For the last 48 hours, I've been hearing Amazon. And I'm not sure if they can do like a super friends type thing where they go, we're going to do like the tech companies, and we're going to grab the smartest people in boxing and some of the smartest writers and these young individuals who maybe worked for the PBC but no longer do anymore. And we're going to grab this guy and we're going to put them at the table and figure out, how do we do this? Who are the people we bring in? How do we present it visually, right? Do we make it more of a big, circus type environment? Or do we keep it, you know, very old school and traditional? Do we have your Gus Johnson type bombastic play-by-play guys? Or do we bring in the old type of guys? Do we have, you know, is this where Kellerman makes his return? This is where Kellerman swoops in like Superman and just does it all. There's so many questions, Jess. I've been railing for a minute, so I want to give you the floor here. Give me your scratch the surface thoughts on this.
Scratch the surface thought is that you can't kill boxing, but
it'll never die.
It'll never die, right? But I feel like one of the major issues and influences of that issue is all the mainstream hype, like combat sports that have been happening over the past 3 to 5 years. You know, just this last weekend, we have, you know, two YouTube influencers fighting in a ring against actual boxers and MMA fighters for lots of money.
It did a bigger number than Canelo.
Exactly.
Like, straight up.
What I'm saying here is that there comes a time when, you know, the people, you know, you have to think of us as like Rome, right? Rome put on gladiator events and stuff for the people. And we are the people and they're the gladiators. And we will pay to see what excites us the most. What's more exciting to see? Canelo go in there and mop the floor with some dude who we all knew what he was going to mop the floor with beforehand? Or is it exciting and fresh to go see Logan Paul fight his arch nemesis Dylan Danis, you know what I mean, in a wacky wonky, you know, boxing match that we'll also get to here in a little bit and share more thoughts on? And I think that some of that stuff is definitely borrowing in and taking a lot of money out of like professional traditional boxing's pockets.
I think the assessment there is, who are the kids that are purchasing that? Is that the kid that grew up watching boxing with his dad and pays for Canelo and goes out of his way to watch, you know, whoever it is, Tank or whoever? Or is that more of the, I'm an 18 to a 22-year-old, I'm a 16, 15 to a 22-year-old, and I can get my parents into paying for this? I can get my dad into watching this the same way that my dad can get me into watching a WrestleMania. I think that's the weird niche market for that. I don't think your clearly your boxing purists are gonna look down. They're gonna turn their nose on it, turn their nose upon it. They're gonna frown upon it no matter what. But there is that 23-year-old to even I would say early 40s, maybe even our age, that they're intrigued by it. The same way, Jesse, that we were intrigued by freak show fights in Japan. Exactly. With Bob Sapp against Minowa Man. You know what I mean? And it's not necessarily a freak fight per se, but there is the I hate to say car crash intrigue, but that's kind of what it is. Like I want to see the result. I want to see what happens. When you're paying for a Dylan Danis fight, when you're paying for that type of fight, you're expecting tomfoolery. If you're not getting tomfoolery, it's almost like you might be a little bit disappointed. I think that the model of let's get these YouTube fighters, let's get these guys that are Twitch gamers, let's get these guys in an arena. I think that there's some substance there, and I think there was who was it, Jess? They had the formula. We loved them for the year that they were active, where it's like they would have rappers, YouTube fighters, and then the main event would be like Tyson versus Holyfield. Who was it that was putting that on?
I don't even remember.
But do you remember there was that? We love those guys
talking about it for a long time.
They did like two or three events.
In our world here, as we do this, you know, podcast, we rarely bring up things like that. So when we're talking about it, like multiple weeks in a row, it's a big deal to us. And usually it's a big deal to the sports world. And those shows were so freaky and weird. It was like you couldn't. It was, to take words from Jason over here, it was like a car crash. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah, excuse it like that. But yeah, but it was, you could not turn away. It was almost like must-see TV. You wanted to see it. That was an event that had like the Ric Flair watching slap fighting. Like, it was fucking all over the place, but it was dope. Okay, so there's the market for that. But I think there's a way to structure a card where you can go, hey, every 3 or 4 months, we're going to put something on where the first fight's going to be a low-level Twitch versus whoever type of fight, right? Salt Poppy was the guy that I was watching fight the other day. I have no idea who the fuck he is. All I know is his name is Salt Poppy. Salt Poppy. It's a cool name. And then you have, like, you mix in for a second fight, like a Golden Gloves Olympic guy. Like a dude that's actually a legitimate fighter. Like, let's say he's 8-0, 10-0, 12-0, and he's going from a 6-rounder to an 8-rounder, or an 8-rounder to a 10-rounder. So that way you can get a little bit of the intrigue of, like, oh, okay, here's an up-and-comer. This is cool. And then you have your co-main event where it's like, okay, we're going to have our Jake Paul. We're going to have our Logan Paul. We're going to have our KSI. We're going to have our Tommy Fury. We're going to have one of these round robin dudes or whoever's hot in a year or two. We're going to have that fight. But then you have your main event, like a true main event where it's like, okay, and I know we've used his name fucking 4 times in the show already, but you have your Canelo here. You have your Tank here. You have your whoever here. You have your showcase fighter here. I think there's a way to do that. Everybody gets paid, and it doesn't feel like, you know, you're dumping $75 that night.
And I actually like that. That's a great idea.
And you're satisfying everybody's thirst is quenched, right? The kids, the teens, the people that want to watch the car crash, and then like your old school boxing fan. Like it's one of those things where it's there. You got to kind of figure it out. Jess, we spent a decent amount of time on this. When I wanted to start this conversation and finish it by, I don't think that we know the solution. There is one there, but there is clearly a problem that can be fixed. It can be remedied. The right people need to get in the room and fucking figure it out for the sake of boxing. And again, Jess, we say this every few years. Boxing's dead. Boxing's dying. You see it. Someone wants to write that article. And then there's a big fucking fight like Ngannou versus Fury, which in essence, it's a freak fight. Like, Jess, that's a freak fight. There ain't no way you can shake it. Ngannou has no pro boxing matches, and he is fighting the best boxer in the world, you can say.
Yeah.
We're about to watch that. The same way we watched Mayweather versus Conor. Like, we're about to watch that shit. All right, let's keep it moving here, Jess. I do want to touch a minute on the Paul versus Dennis fight, because you and I both watch this fucker. And I stuck around. I watched a decent amount of this card. I told Jess pre-show. I fell asleep during the KSI fight, guys. So I don't have some groundbreaking, cool analysis on that fight. I can't argue for or against KSI because I just took a little snooze-a-lose during that fight. But I did watch Paul versus Dennis. And it was everything that we thought it would be. It really was. It was a bad fight between a dude that has no true boxing experience, but he's probably sparred 200 rounds worth of boxing, 300 rounds worth of boxing throughout his career, just training in MMA and being in MMA gyms. And there are guys that are like, hey, you want to spar? Yeah, I need sparring today. Fuck it. You're going to get boxing sparring. You're going to get combat sports boxing. It just happens in an MMA gym. So I wasn't surprised that he stuck around for the six rounds. I wasn't really impressed by anything or anybody. And if anything, I got to laugh at the ending. The ending was just like, as a pro wrestling fan and as a fan as you know, Jess, just chaos in combat sports, the ending just made me smile ear to ear. Give me some thoughts, Jess.
Well, it was definitely uncontrolled chaos from the start, the starting bell to the ending of the match. There was almost no technical boxing skills displayed in the entire fight. Dennis looked like, you know, like you said, he looked basically like a dude who's just sparred boxing, never, you know, really taken steps and, practiced every day and did footwork. He just kind of went out there and he was winging some stuff. The worst thing is Logan has been a, like, quote unquote professional boxer for some time.
He fought Floyd Mayweather.
He's had boxing matches. He's had a lot more boxing experience than Dylan Dennis as far as like technical boxing. And he went out there and he looked like the biggest jobber I've ever seen. Like, it may have been the jobber. Yeah, are you like that? It's that bringing in the wrestling terms, baby. I don't even know if the heat was real between these guys. Maybe that girl. Maybe the girl's blowing them both, and like we don't know. Who knows, dude? Yeah. Right? Stop. I'm just saying. When you come into the ring, if there's a situation going on and you feel that heated towards it, like I remember, I think it was at the beginning before they touched gloves. Logan looks over at Dylan and goes, "I forgive you."
Yeah, I think they mentioned it during the fight, Jess. I don't mean to cut you off. I think that he was saying to keep himself from going mentally over the edge, he was telling him this, "I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you," to keep himself from just going into an absolute rage.
It probably would have been a better fight if he would have went into an absolute rage, because that fight sucked. I think you could have fought them both at the same time and won.
Oh, are you kidding me? Can me and you do tag team boxing?
If we tag team boxed, it'd be the end of it. We'd be the next influencers.
We can. The problem is we weigh too much because we're like 400 plus combined pounds. Wait, probably 450 if I think about it. You're 220. You're like 265 right now. I'm sorry. Yeah, so we're closer to 500 possibly.
We're the masters of disaster, man.
We're basically the road warriors walking in there and telling them that we're looking for that business. We're looking for that action. We're about that business. We're standing on that business. Stand on that business.
Stand on it. Logan Paul needs to. Here's the thing.
No, Jesse needs to pro wrestle.
I honestly, I felt it was a work.
Keep it real.
I'm gonna be for real. I felt that the entire thing was a work. And the way the thing that really caught me was at the end when he's talking about, oh yeah, Dylan Danis is a punk, blah blah blah. I'm done with this. Oh hey, Rey Mysterio Jr., I'm calling you out for your United States. Man, Jess, I absolutely felt that entire thing was a work.
Please name title the show Paul versus Danis Worker Shoot Brother. Because that's the name of today's show. That is a crazy concept that I cannot agree with, but it tickles my pickle. I like it. I like the idea, again, me being the pro wrestling fan, of just everybody getting worked to the tune of a million buys. Like, I really do like that idea. It really does just, it delights me. But I don't believe it. Now, if you want to say the heat was a little generated, right? Like if they both said, hey, I'm going to draw some heat. I'm going to say some things that are going to fucking piss you off. I'm going to say some things about your old lady. But he went beyond that. And I don't want to even get into this, Jess, but he went beyond that. So that's where I'm like, I don't know if that's fake heat. I think that there's some real legitimate heat there, and he couldn't knock him out. He just couldn't knock Danis out because he didn't take the fight seriously. He said afterwards that he truly didn't train for the fight because he's busy at the fucking performance center getting ready to wrestle Ricochet again. Like, so when you have the combination of Danis is not a true boxer and probably didn't train seriously with Paul is not a true fighter and didn't train seriously, you're gonna get two guys in there with a fucking sloppy fight that ended the way it did. And you said it yourself, Jess, him saying, hey, I'm not calling anybody out, I'm calling out fucking Rey Mysterio, was fucking hilarious to me. I was on my couch just giggling like you could not believe, going, I can't believe this dude. And he's right. He should be only wrestling Dylan Dallas. Wrestling Rey Mysterio. He's a talented pro wrestler. And listen, this is where he's got to be. Stay in your lane. Leave the celebrity boxing and the YouTube boxing for the YouTube boxers. And you go and do your thing. Hey, just like Jake Hager retired from MMA. And he's like, no, I'm just going to focus on pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just go focus on pro wrestling, my guy.
No, it works, man. Anybody that's watched Logan Paul wrestle, like WWE wrestle, like, you're like, I can't believe this kid's never done this professionally before. Like, he comes in there, he's doing some shooting star, you know, some shooting star presses and like flips, and like, you're like,
he locks up well though.
You're like,
he even like locks up well.
Exactly.
Like, you can tell that he's been training with an actual team and not in some fucking jack off school.
Like, exactly. Not like we did when we were kids and we were jumping off on our mattresses. Like, Logan's actually doing it the right way. He's got the money to do it. You can see that WWE wrestling, professional wrestling, that's where his thing is, right?
All I'm saying
is that the social media influencer boxing shit is one thing to take some product and money away from true traditional boxing.
Oh yeah,
but
no,
also,
you're right.
But
no.
Also, it pisses off the traditionalist who wants to see the Canelos and wants to see that type of fighter, but then has to turn on a channel and watch, you know, Dylan Danis versus Logan Paul, have to swallow the fact that people out there take that as real boxing. I think that if you're a traditional boxing fan, then I think that sometimes watching this stuff and knowing that people actually like think it's real, like real boxing, I think that is a tough pill to swallow for a lot of those guys.
I think this is where it's tough. And I think this is where I would hope that maybe some connections can be made between uncles, primos, fathers and sons, and cousins and nephews, where you're watching this fight on a Saturday night and they go, you think that's boxing? Let me put on this Mike Tyson versus Evander Holyfield fight. You think that's boxing? Let me put on Trinidad versus Vargas. You think that's boxing? Let me put on Morales versus Barrera. And while you can enjoy this style of boxing, recognize that this is not what we call the sweet science. This is, you know, this is what it is. What it is. Is it a work? Jess might think so. Is it a shoot? I don't know. Jess, let's keep it moving because I don't want to do old. I don't want to do old man.
No. We got.
And I'm ready. I'm ready when it comes to this boxing shit because you are right, sir. I'm ready. Let's keep it moving.
UFC, what do we got here? What UFC card is this now? UFC 294. This card has been remade 15,000 times.
It's weird.
Since it was first produced. And it's now weird. We're at where we're at. And this card hopefully is the final edition. And because Jay and I are going to discuss this main card right now.
You already know that we're jinxing this fucker. And we've done so many of these. Where the card, we do this on a Wednesday and then the card changes Wednesday night. The card changes Thursday morning. Go fucking, someone gets into a fight and throws a shoe at somebody at a weigh-in and a fucking, everything changes. Jess, as you said earlier, we're not going to touch the undercard. Although Tim Elliott versus Mokaev to me is interesting. This is a team, AKA San Jose Love Fest. I don't think I've ever seen a card where basically majority of the fighters are from one camp, but here we are. We're going to start at the bottom here, Jess. I'm seeing some big favorites on this card, and I don't know if any of us are going to whip our dicks out here and try and pick an underdog. I think I like one. And I think I'm gonna leave it there. Let's start at the bottom, Jess. And I am going to butcher every one of these names, guys. Please take no offense. Syed Nurmagomedov. He's taking on Moon Gafurov. I feel like I've seen Gafurov fight before. Jess, who you got?
The last name says it all. Nurmagomedov. He's one of Khabib's family. He trains with Khabib. Okay,
San Jose.
I'm telling you that team in itself is tough as nails. And when I believe that Khabib honestly is one of the best coaches in all MMA. And he's got the resume to prove that inside the cage. And now, I mean, if you look at how many of his fighters have great records now. I mean, it's hard to argue against that. In this case, whatever the fuck your name is, you're gonna lose, kid. I don't care where you're from, how good you are at striking, how many kickboxing matches you've had, how many wrestling tournaments you've won. Nurmagomedov is something different. And this guy, not Khabib 2 over in Bellator, but which, by the way, he's also got Bellator champions going on over there too. So that's this Nurmagomedov is also an elite boxer with very significant striking skills. I expect this fight to go quick, sometime in the first round. I'm gonna go TKO, Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, we're gonna get a lot of grapple fucking during this show. Let me tell you, you're gonna get a lot of fans booing because they want to see violence. And you're going to get violence, but it's going to be that old school Randy Couture, Team Couture, just laying on top of you and you're mopping you up with those short little chopping punches and elbows and forearms. A lot of these fights to me feel more like, will they get out of it? Will they make it to a judge's decision? And this is a fight I do not believe will make it to a judge's decision. I like Syed. I think he gets a finish here at some point in the second round. Let's keep it moving here, Jess. The next fight I'm looking at is going to be Wally Alves. He is taking Ikram Aliserkov. God, I butchered that one too, and I looked at it even before I read it. I was just intimidated by it. I believe this is a decent-sized dog, plus 180. No, I'm looking at the last fight. Plus 430. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Ay, Jess, who you got?
I've got Aliskarov. Again, I'm guessing probably Khabib, one of Khabib's camp. The kid's 18 or 14-1. He's a wrestler by base. Warley Alves, don't get me wrong, very tough competitor. We've seen him fight in the UFC for many years now. But if you take a look at that record, man, it's pretty weak, and he's lost his last two. I believe he's lost his last three out of his last four. I don't expect that losing streak to stop this Saturday.
This is another, will it make it to a third round? And I don't believe so. And clearly neither does Vegas. Ground and pound.
Yeah.
Take him down, ground and pound, choke, arm. He's taking something with him. I'm going to go TKO finish round one. Jess, I kind of like this next fight. And I was feeling like if I was going to grab an upset, this is it. Johnny Walker is back. This is a fucking tough fight, Jess. Golly. Again, if there's going to be an upset, I think this would be it. But I'm definitely not picking him. He's taking on Magomed Ankalaev. Ankalaev is clearly one of the toughest guys in the fucking division, Jess. Who you got?
Man, you know, I didn't realize that Walker was on such a big win streak right now.
Dude, he's turning around.
His last three fights, so since losing to Jamal Hill and
who was the fucking champion?
Yeah, he's lost to Kudalaba. He's beat Kudalaba, beat Paul Craig, and then beat Anthony Smith just recently. And none of those fights, only one of those fights went to the decision, and that was the Anthony Smith fight.
And that was five rounds, and that was impressive.
But I am going to stand my grounds. I believe that Magomed Ankalaev is the overall better rounded fighter. I think that Johnny Walker is going to be better with the strikes. But here's the thing. When we talk about striker versus wrestler, we usually tend to give the advantage to the wrestler. Why is that? Because if the wrestler gets a hold of you and puts you on your back, you can't really strike from the ground. And that's where I believe Johnny Walker is going to spend most of his time. Ankalaev just went to a draw for the light heavyweight championship after, like, what? I believe that he was I don't even think that he was scheduled to fight. Yep. I believe that he was a fill-in, and he went to a draw with the champion. This guy is ready to go. He's had a full camp. I believe he beats Johnny Walker. It won't be easy. The first round, I could see slipping to Walker, just him being a little bit more active on his feet, Ankalaev trying to get his legs underneath him, and then watch for the second and the third round to go Ankalaev's way.
The only way I see the upset is Walker just lands some crazy, wild kick, knee type of strike while Ankalaev is shooting. I think it's in play. I think if you've got a lot of money and you want to just lay some crazy cash just because this might be the only upset, in my opinion, go for it. Whip it out. But I think Ankalaev just drags him into the deep waters. And I think we get a wash, rinse, repeat here. We're going to get takedowns, beatdowns, and I think he'll be able to catch Walker in a choke. So I like Ankalaev round two submission. All right, Jess, co-main event. Original fight was Secret Juice Paulo. I'm a little bit disappointed that he pulled out, but now I'm seeing him on Instagram with, like, holes in his arm and shit, so maybe he did the right thing.
He's turning into a damn zombie. It's all that juice, man. He needed to lay off the secret juice.
Man, I mean, smoking cigarettes your entire life. At some point, it's gonna backfire. At some point, those long term fucking storytelling of those cigarettes is not good.
It's hard to be hanging out with Instagram models when you got holes in your skin, man.
Like, that's a great point. You got to wear a lot of long sleeve shirts.
A lot.
You got to be dry fit because you still want to show.
Pull off that chest. Rock look with the silk long sleeve shirts from like 95.
just get a bunch of Under Armour fucking dry fits, dog. You're going to be looking great. Yeah, and then, you know, and then just like fucking rub, you know, spray Bactine when you need to. Okay, Usman. Man, I love Usman in this fight, but he's wild for this one. Usman is at a weird crossroads, Jess, because this to me doesn't feel like your usual damned if you lose even if you win. You know, a lot of times, Jess, when I'm talking about these, you take a fight on short notice, you win even if you lose. This to me doesn't feel like that. Because this to me feels like a fight that it's almost like he needs to win it. Not necessarily a loser leave town type fight, but he's at a crossroads here where if he loses badly, there's no way you could even consider him for a fight back with Edwards or anyone like that for a minute. And if he wins, was the goddamn champion, or is he, or he's fighting the champion? He immediately skyrockets to number one contender. So I feel like there's a lot of win, you know, that there's that win-win aspect. But if you lose badly, that's a problem. I hate going up in weight in short notice and fighting a dude that you know is coming down to 185. That to me just always is a fucking recipe for disaster, man. Maybe because it's a 3-round fight, Usman can steal 2 out of the 3. But I mean, isn't he usually a slow starter? I feel like all roads lead to Usman losing. Now, how he loses is going to be the real story, because is this going to be a scenario where Chimaev Kozma, he can't take him down? I don't know. I really don't know. I think that's going to be, in my opinion, that's the juice of this fight. That's what I want to watch. That's what I want to see when these two fucking bulls lock horns and Usman defends that takedown, because you know Chimaev's going to shoot for one. Man, I love this fight. I just hate Usman moving up. I'm going Chimaev decision. I think this has the I think there's some substance here for a great fight, but it really is going to depend on what Usman brings to the dance. If he comes and he's able to keep this a stalemate, he's able to maybe even take Chimaev down, which I don't think, but if he can somehow, maybe late in the rounds because they're both getting tired. But if he's also able to strike, because I think Usman is a little bit of a better striker. Chimaev is a great striker, don't get me wrong, but I think Usman has popping those gloves at 170, maybe not at 185. Again, this is where I go back to those all roads lead to fucking Kozmat. But I'm going Kozmat decision. I think he wins 2 of the 3 rounds. Jess, who you got?
I'm going to go against the grain, man. I think that Usman, I think is only he's not favored in this fight because of the two Leon Edwards fights. They were both championship fights. Kozmat, I've looked at his record up and down, man, and you look at it and you're like, man, it's a fantastic record. He's 12-0, undefeated. He's looked pretty strong in almost all those fights. He's an overwhelming favorite in most of those fights, but the quality of talent that he's fought is not at the level of Usman, and that's not Chimaev's fault. Usman's been the champion over there for such a long time. You have to fight the best of the best of the best, like week in and week out, right? So the records are going to look different, but Chimaev's record, again, I keep going back to it. I just don't like that quality of talent that he's been beating compared to the people that Usman's been putting beatings on for the last year and a half, being the champion. Leon Edwards, I think, is a hurricane. I think it was just styles make fights. And we've seen it through the history of combat sports. It doesn't matter who you are. There's always somebody out there that gives you fits. Doesn't mean that you lose to them. Just they give you crazy fits. You just can't stop them. And Leon Edwards was just that for Usman. In this fight, I don't think that Usman has the advantage in the wrestling. I do think he has the advantage in the technical striking. Kozmat loves to throw wild, heavy punches. Well, he's going to have to watch out because Usman also is a decorated wrestler. Maybe not to the extent or level or power that Chimaev has, but he is a decorated wrestler and he will be able to take Chimaev down. Chimaev is going to start winging punches like he does in every single fight. And if Usman's smart, he's going to look for takedowns and try to get those single and doubles and get as many takedowns as he can to at least show cage control. I do believe it's going to be a very, very tough fight. I think it's going to go, I believe it's a 5-rounder. I believe it's going to go all 5 rounds. But I think at the end, Usman will have three of the five. And
I think this is only a three-rounder, Jess. That's what
Is it only a three-rounder? That's crazy. But
yeah, it's only a three-rounder.
If it's a three-rounder, then same thought process. I can see Usman taking the first, being fresher. He's a little bit quicker. I can see him taking the first. I can see Kazmat coming back strong, taking the second. I think Usman charges down late in the round and takes the third. Usman, like you said, is a slower starter, but I think that he's going to be able to maneuver enough in the first and then steal the third at least.
Main event time, Jess. It's been switched. I loved this fight when it initially went down. I thought Volk won this fight. I was screaming from the rooftops on this show, Volk won, and also, please run this fight back. So I am satisfied that this fight is going down. Feel bad for Charles. I love Charles, but this is just one of those scenarios where I actually love the fill-in. This, to me, feels like a win-win. Even if Volk loses, he still wins. Volk is, I guess you could say, a good sized underdog. I see -300, which is basically 3-1 for Islam. Islam's the champ. Volk's going up once again, Jess. Short notice. I guess let me start on this one. Okay. I want to pick Volk so bad here, but I think the difference is the first time they fought, Islam was still a little bit wet behind the ears, hadn't had a challenge like this. And this was Volk just absolute on a different fucking level and just able to push Islam to spots that he had never been. And I love that for him. I think this fight's completely different. And I don't see this as a trending up versus trending down as much as I see it both guys are trending up, but this is just a different fight for Volk. And now Islam kind of I want to say he knows what's coming, but he has a better idea of what's coming because he fucking fought him at the highest level for 25 minutes. I'm going to go Islam this time. I think this could once again be a razor-thin fight. I think Islam's tank will be a little bit better in this fight. I don't think that Volk's going to be able to get those sneaky takedowns late. Or this might be a scenario where Islam banks the first three rounds. And we end up going, Volk won the last two. A hell of an effort, but just not enough. I'm going Islam. Decision 3-2, Jess. Who you got?
Again, I'm going to go the opposite direction. I think that this, to me, feels like a legacy fight for Volk. Volk needs this win back. He needs to maintain his number one spot on pound for pound. And this is how he gets it back. And I know that it's a short camp. You know what I mean? I get it. But Volk does nothing but win fights. I was looking at his overall record up until his loss against Islam. His last loss was a loss in 2013. This guy is he's a fucking animal. And all he does is win. When he went on his title tear, he held the title from December 14th of 19 up until his loss to Islam, February 11th of 23. These numbers are incredible. And the hype train, I used to think, was like every other hype train. It was just hype. This guy has lived up to every bit of hype, and this is his legacy fight right here. He needs to get this one back. Whether it was for the title or not, Volk needs to win this fight. And I think that the first fight that they had, I have to agree with you. Obviously, Islam a little wet behind the ears. He was just getting his feet underneath him. He actually got that fight due to some injuries, I believe. And so they kind of threw him into that mix a little bit sooner than most people thought that he deserved or was ready for. But he went in there for 25 minutes, went toe-to-toe with the champ and did his business. Now he's had camps underneath him as the champ. He's had time to defend. He's had time to walk around with that belt and feel the true weight of the responsibility of having that belt around your waist. Volk wants it back, and I'm telling you, he's going to come back and get it back. It's going to be very close. I think both these guys are fairly even across the board. Both guys I think that Volk probably brings a little bit different type of striking, but I don't want to necessarily call it better. It's just different the way that he comes at you than Islam does. Both wrestling styles are also very, very good, but both slightly different. Obviously, Islam a little bit more technical with his wrestling, whereas Volk is a little bit more power or uses more power in his takedowns. But at the end of the day, I think Volk needs this fight more than Islam does, and he wants this fight bad. He needs to get it back. I'm going with Volk by decision.
Wow, man, it has been a while since we've done one of these. Back, you and I both separate winners on the co-main and the main. I love it. All right. Well, Jess, that concludes our MMA hour, 40 minutes deep. That was good. I felt really good. All right.
Big,
Let's
you know,
get.
I didn't realize that there were so many big cards on that fight. I mean, or fights
There's
on
some
that card.
decent, there's some decent fights, and I think they've got some stuff cooking here coming around the corner. So we've got to figure out if we can get a guest for next week, Ngannou Fury. I would like to try and get a boxing guy.
Yeah.
We shall see. Let's see here. Right. Okay, I've pulled up our football stuff here, Jess. I'm going to let you lead. I'm going to start with Thursday night. As always, ladies and gentlemen, we are utilizing the lines.com, Caesars Sportsbook, FanDuel, BetMGM, PointsBet, BetRivers, Bet365, DraftKings, all of your favorite websites to gamble on, to win big bucks on. We're going to take the numbers. We'll consolidate them here. We'll start with Thursday. The Jacksonville Jaguars, they're back in America. They're traveling to New Orleans. I see a one across the board. I do see a 1.5. So I'm going to stick with the one here, Jess. New Orleans is a 1-point favorite at home. I have not read the article, but I've heard some rumblings that Kamara was upset and talking a little bit of shit and asking for some accountability from his teammates. I don't know if you saw that, Jess. Who you got?
I didn't see it, but it would make sense. New Orleans looks kind of messy right now, a little bit sloppy. I'm going to go Jacksonville on the road. I'm going to go Jacksonville. Jaguars right now have the hot. They got the hot hand. Trevor Lawrence is playing really good football. And honestly, the MVP of the Jacksonville Jaguars right now is Travis Etienne. That guy has, I mean, this has been a hell of a bump in his career in a good way. Like, he has really stepped up his game this season, and he's looked really, really impressive. I've got Jacksonville, and I'll take the points.
Yeah, God dang, I really want to go the other way. I like New Orleans here for some reason. I like New Orleans at home, but Jacksonville, I feel like, has figured it out. I feel like they've fine-tuned everything. They've turned it around. I like Jacksonville, and I like the points. I think this might be an ugly Thursday night. Let's all run the ball. Low scoring, first to 20 wins. But I like Jacksonville.
Let's be real, all Thursday night games are ugly. This one won't be any different.
I feel like not only are there ugly Thursday night games, but I took a peek at the holiday games, and there's a lot of bad ones. There's a lot of Jet games. There's Denver games. There's a
Damn
Raider
it.
game. There's a lot.
How
The
dare
holiday
you,
games are
Roger
bad,
Goodell, ruin my Thanksgiving morning?
bro. Bad and mid. We're going the wrong way. Shout out to the schedule makers that really thought the Jets were gonna fucking be the. I guess we all did. We all thought the Jets would be good.
We
So shout out to
all
Aaron.
thought that for sure.
Shout out to Aaron Rodgers for just fucking letting his leg blow out and duping us
And
all.
now just being now, and now all he does is just sit on a Pat McAfee show like every fucking day.
And just
Just
it takes a
talk and
stick,
just talk shit.
takes
Like,
a
that's all he
stick and
does.
just pokes at everybody. He's just poke. Who am I poking at today with my stick that's gonna
Oh.
get everybody fucking talking? All right, the Washington football team. God, I almost called them the Generals. Still want to call them the Redskins, Commanders. I see 1.5. I see more twos than I do 1.5. They are on the road. They are a favorite. We'll stick with the two, Jess. They are playing the New York Giants. I still believe the Giants might be the worst team in the league. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, even the game this last week against Buffalo, I know that they showed a lot of spirit and a lot of heart, and they had a lot of chances to win. And people can say they're blown calls, but they're blown calls on both sides of the field. I think that Tyrod Taylor definitely gives the Giants a different type of advantage, but not a better advantage than like you know, like an Aaron Rodgers or a starting an actual starting quarterback. I love Tyrod, but he's not going to give you everything you need to win games, but he'll give you a little bit more than Daniel Jones. But in Washington, I got to tell you, Sam Howell's not exactly lighting up the scoreboards with yardage, but somehow that dude comes out with 3 touchdown passes a game. I don't know. I mean, he's passing for like 35 yards and 3 touchdowns like every game. Like, it's insane. I like Sam Howell's game. I think that Washington and Rivera have finally figured out their part in how they want to play football, which is run the ball a whole lot. A lot of short little screen passes, get it out to Logan Thomas in the flat as you get your tight end open. And then make sure Howell doesn't have to go deep and turn the ball over. It's worked out for them last couple weeks. I like Washington and I like the points.
Yep, gotta agree with you here. That quarterback's turning it around. It's interesting to see what they'll do moving forward. This is once again the part of the show where we say we love Rivera as a coach. He somehow figures it out. He's in that upper echelon with Tomlin and those guys, in my opinion. I like Washington. I like the points, and New York is going to continue to be stinky. And they just really got to figure something out at receiver. If you can get Davante Adams for like the barn right now, like you got to basically give away all of your picks for the next 2 years, but you can get Davante Adams. I think you fucking pull the trigger on that.
I think you still need a quarterback to throw to Davante Adams.
Good fucking point. It's our boy. It's not Gino. Who did they have the other night? Fucking balling against the Bills?
Tyrod Taylor.
It's our boy Tyrod. Hey, listen. Game manager throws the ball away when he needs to. So what if he fucked up the 2 biggest possessions of the game? all right. Atlanta Falcons. They are on the road. I don't understand why, because they're so weird this year. But they are a 2.5-point dog to the at-home Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is an NFC South slugfest. Jess, who you got?
I like Tampa Bay and I like the points, but that's only because I think it's going to be like 16-13. Atlanta's really – I don't want to say they've come along a long ways, but they're a lot further along than they were, you know, week 3. And Ritter is beginning to show signs of looking a tad bit more comfortable in the pocket, which is a good sign. I believe that their wide receiver, Drake London, had the best game of his season last week. He finally breached 100 yards receiving. That's a good sign if you're Atlanta. You know, if you're an Atlanta fan, that's a good sign. The bad thing is your damn head coach don't want to play one of the most dynamic running backs in the league. I don't know if Bijan Robinson's touched the ball in the last couple of weeks. I don't know what that situation is. Are you just preserving the guy? Whatever. I say unleash the beast and let him get you something, because without your playmakers on the field, man, like, you're going to lose football games. I like Tampa Bay in this one, though. I like the points. Like I said, something like 16-13, 17-14.
Yeah, the Ritter thing to me is just so weird. There's spots where he looks great, and then there's spots where he's mid. Man, I just have such a problem picking against Tampa because I have not seen them have a great game. Now, I haven't watched a lot of their games. I watched a game against the Eagles. I've watched a lot of their red zone, but I have a problem picking Tampa, which means I am going Atlanta. Atlanta's my gut feeling. I'm rolling with them. I like Atlanta. Right. I like the upset. The Detroit Lions, who quietly have become the darling of the NFC. I've seen people rank them as high as 1 in the NFC. They're a 3-point dog on the road facing the Baltimore Ravens. Jess, I'm going to go ahead and give this the hashtag Hornet stamp of approval. I think this game is fun. I think this game is going to be fucking great. 3 points, Baltimore at home. Who you got?
I think this is absolutely disrespectful to my man, Dan Campbell. You get 3-point dog against the Baltimore Ravens. Come on, NFL. Come on.
The Ravens defense is tough. This is going to be the big meaty men slapping meat when you get that physical Baltimore defense against that high-flying Lions offense and vice versa. That physical Lions defense.
Your boy, Aiden Hutchinson, going to be coming off that line. He's going to be swatting at Lamar.
This is the game you want to key in, ladies and gentlemen, is all I'm saying.
Absolutely, this game is hashtag horned for the NFL. This game is the first one that we've talked about that's hashtag horns. And I'm telling you, man, like there's everything to like about this game and just and nothing to dislike. I mean, Lamar and the Ravens have been winning some games, but they don't look great. Lamar hasn't looked phenomenal, but they're still winning games, right? So the Ravens are still in the mix. And then the Lions are quietly having one of the best seasons in their entire franchise history this season right now as we watch with our own very eyes. Dan Campbell, my man, bro, Campbell leading the charge. And then you got Jared Baby Hands Goff. Make fun of his little hands all you want to, folks. He is a true right now mid-season MVP candidate right now. Goff is quietly putting up some serious numbers. And he is looking right now at having the best season of his entire career this year right now, which is insane. We've seen it all. The storylines are all there. And now we get to the game. I think it is going to be a smash 'em up, bash 'em up football game. It's outside. We all love outside games, real grass. We love to play in the real grass. Detroit, I think, is going to have to run the ball to win. And Baltimore is going to have Lamar run the ball also to win because they don't really have a running back. I'm going Detroit in this game. I think it's crazy that the Detroit Lions, playing the way they have been all season, are dogs to the Baltimore Ravens, even on the road. I think that there comes a point in time when you just got to say, hey, man, this team's obviously better, and we're going to give them the edge. Detroit deserves that bump. I'm getting Detroit and the points.
I feel like the media finally respects Detroit. Why doesn't Vegas? I love this game.
Old school mafiosos, man. They can't let it go. Man,
this, okay. So does, if I say, Jess, this is whoever, this is 17-17 at the end of four quarters, there's 3 minutes left, and whoever has the ball ends up winning this game. Doesn't that feel like one of these games?
Yeah.
God damn, I want to go Detroit. I'm going Detroit. I'm sold on it. Here's my second upset special. This isn't an upset. Detroit's the real deal.
They're physical.
They run the ball well. They scheme elaborate. Baby Hands Goff is doing his thing. People talking about Baby Hands Goff MVP. I mean, fucking unbelievable. Yeah, I'm going Detroit. I like Detroit. I love the points. Jesse, I see Buffalo here. I'm going to skip them and hit one. They got 2 10 o'clock games left, so let's go to those. All right. The Cleveland Browns, they are on the road. They just disrespected the 49ers. I'm going to steal that from you now. Just slapped them around at home. There was the nobody believes in us game, and boy, did they come through. 1.5 point favorite across the board. They're traveling to Indianapolis. It's Minshew Mania. It's the Colts. It's that double-headed dragon running back of Moss and Taylor. Who you got?
I'm going with Cleveland. I don't like the Browns offense in any way, shape, or form, but that defense right now, I believe, is still the number one rated defense in the league. And they play hard, they play fast, they love to put a whooping on people. I think that Taylor and Zach Moss are a great combo to have in the backfield, but will you be able to open up holes against this defense? And I just don't think that there's going to be that much running space for those guys. And as far as Minshew Mania, I mean, it's a terrible way to end the season with Anthony Smith going down, or Anthony Richardson, excuse me, Anthony Richardson going down, AR-15. He hurts his shoulder. Sounds like he's going to have season-ending shoulder surgery. And like I said, man, I think that kid is he's going to be great for this franchise. Minshew Mania has been around the block a time or two. He's won a few games. He's lost a lot more. I don't see this. I see that trend continuing. Cleveland right now is the hot trending up. The Colts are trending down. I've got Cleveland on the road.
Yeah, I got to agree. I think the Colts are trending down like you wouldn't believe. And I think the 1.5 is low. I think this feels like a touchdown game for Cleveland. I think Cleveland can just pound the rock. I hope our boy PJ Walker stays in the game. Don't turn the fucking ball over, PJ, just like you did when you were slanging it in the XFL. And just keep moving the fucking chains. Keep that. And I think Minshew Mania is good for at least a turnover or two against that defense. I like Cleveland. A low-scoring game, let's say 17-10, 17-6. I wouldn't be surprised if the Colts don't score any touchdowns at all. I like Cleveland. I love the points. Next 10 o'clock game. Ooh, this one's weird. The Las Vegas Raiders. Are they hot? They've won two games in a row, I believe. They are traveling, I guess you can say, east. Yeah, I mean, Chicago's in the east. They're playing an early game. They're playing the Chicago Bears. This is a lively game, Jess. This could be an all-time stinker. 3 points across the board for the Vegas Raiders traveling. Who you got?
This is, as someone wise once quoted, bowling shoe ugly. This game is going to be nasty to watch. We don't even know. Here's the funny thing. With the Bears, I've been hearing that Justin Fields is trending down to not playing this week because of an injury that happened last week during the game. I believe it was like a dislocated thumb or something like that happened. So people automatically think, well, your starting quarterback's out, you're going to lose. Well, he only had like 37 yards passing up until that point in the first place. So really, what was your starting quarterback doing? Justin Fields coming off two straight weeks of slinging the ball around pretty well to DJ Moore. Defenses, like Jay and I talked about, figured it out. You just covered DJ. Double team that motherfucker. Take him away from your quarterback and then make him make plays. Defenses did that. And Justin Fields failed to get to move the ball. And then their boy, I believe it's an undrafted free agent quarterback. Badgent is his last name. He's no one knows that name because no one knows him or where he played football at or even that he's alive. But he is currently on the Chicago Bears roster as the QB2. He came in, moved the ball for like 30 more yards, fumbled the ball on one drive, lost that ball. And then threw a pick on his next drive. So the Chicago Bears are not looking too hot right now. I like the Vegas Raiders, and give me all the points you want to give me.
It just feels so weird to pick so many road teams consecutively. But here we are. I like Vegas. God, Vegas, 3 wins in a row. Jess, when I was doing that, when we were doing our preseason picks, and I was looking at games and going, yeah, these are winnable games for the Raiders. Here was one I penciled in. I'm not coming off of it. I like Vegas. I love the points. I think they win by 7. I think this is a touchdown game. I think that they'll fuck around and the Bears will stay in this game just to break the Bears fans' hearts. They'll stay in this game. They'll be lively for about 3 quarters. And then at some point there in that 4th quarter, the Raiders will put it together.
Is this an Aiden O'Connell game, or are we?
Dude,
back
I don't
Jimmy
know.
G?
But listen, don't get me started on AOC. I think it's. I mean, why fuck around? There's clearly something going on with Jimmy G. It seems like the writing's on the wall. It seems like there's a bad foot out the door already.
Yeah.
So I listen. I think AOC is the future. So why fuck around? I say start him now. Fuck it.
He's a gunslinger, man. Put him in that game. Let Devontae rip.
And dude, and if McDaniels really wants to keep his job for another year, go to that dumb owner and go, hey, listen, we're gonna fucking play AOC for the rest of the year. Tell me confidently I'll be able to keep my job next year because I'll be able to figure some shit out with this kid once I get to tweak him. And fucking Davis Jr. will say, yes, that's a great idea. How do I sound dumber? Girl, this sounds like a great idea. I'm sorry, Brian. I love you. I'm having fucking too much fun.
That was fantastic, though.
All right. Raiders points. Let's keep it moving. The last 10 o'clock game. The Buffalo Bills, and we are going to keep going bowling shoe ugly. They won a bowling shoe ugly game against the Giants. They should have took the belt off and just spanked their ass. But this was a weird game, Jess, and your Twitter was on fire Sunday night. Let me tell you, I stopped watching the game. I was just watching your tweets. I was refreshing my page. You went through, and this is why I love following you during these games, because you really do go through the full gamut of emotions.
Oh, yeah.
I told you this last year. This is why I stopped tweeting during the Cowboys game. Check how many tweets I sent during that fucking Monday night game. And I probably threw my phone across the room probably 17 times. I just don't fucking tweet anymore. It's too much. It's too much. You really did. You fired everybody. We hid the ball in a fucking popcorn machine. We did everything. The spectrum was everything.
It was awesome.
It was, you were fired up. You were mad at Allen. You were mad. You were fucking mad at everybody. The defense, the coordinators. So they find a way to win that game. And they are an 8.5 point favorite. I see 9 at DraftKings, but we'll stick with the 8.5. They're on the road and they are playing the New England Patriots. Jess, who you got?
Yeah, so when you love something, man, sometimes you can go a bit nutty with the emotional.
You're a passionate guy.
I am a passionate guy, and I love the Buffalo Bills, man. I love my family. I love my family. I love the Buffalo Bills, and then there's my friends right after the Buffalo Bills. So that's the order. And sometimes it's Buffalo first. Just saying, depends on where my family's at and who's pissing me off that week. The Buffalo Bills, I don't think that they found a way to win as much as they did find a way not to lose. Like, the Giants really helped them out. Tyrod, it wasn't even Tyrod's fault. I guess it's just play calling, right? It's coaching. They try to run the ball with, like, 3 seconds left in the half, you know, instead of taking points at the end of the game. Honestly, I felt that was the time to run the ball. Buffalo had been letting a couple big run plays go during that game against New York. And then at the end of the game to win the game, don't get me wrong. Dable designed that play at the very end. It was a very nice play design. And it nearly worked. And you can call holding and defensive pass interference and all that other stuff. But realistically, it was a great defensive play. If you look at the replay of it, it was a great defensive play by Taron Johnson of the Buffalo Bills. And he stopped the game winner. Buffalo wins. Buffalo fans all throughout my Twitter feed were going through the same gauntlet as I was. I'm telling you, like, you got the ones who are like, nah, you guys are wrong. Dorsey's great. Like, you know, this is Josh Allen's fault. And then you got other people saying, no, fuck you. Josh Allen's the god. Dorsey's crap. Fire McD. Fuck, you know, and then there's me going through everything. You know, I would just fire everybody. Just, let's start over from the ground up.
It was tough.
I mean, so now we move on. Buffalo gets the dub, and that's realistically the only thing that counts, right? You get the dub. You get the win. That's where it's at.
I agree.
Move on to week 7. The New England Patriots right now are... I mean, I don't want to say that they're garbage, but they're kind of garbage. Which makes me really happy because for the first time in a long time, I can truly say that I have no fear of the New England Patriots whatsoever. Even last year, I remember when they had Cam Newton for like that season, they were still kind of dangerous. Their defense was really good. Cam was making some plays. I mean, he almost beat Buffalo in their playoff game. So, I mean... now you truly have no one at quarterback. They have a reasonable running back. They have nobody at wide receiver. Their offensive line is trash. And although their defense is still a good defense, you can definitely see that the season wear and tear has taken a lot out of their defense from just simply being on the field all day long. I am going to shock you all, though. I don't like the points. It is an AFC East battle. It is on the road. I like Buffalo to win. I don't like the points. I see Buffalo getting out with another 6, you know, maybe 7-point win, but it's not going to be no 8.5.
Yeah, you know what? Call me crazy, but I think the New England Patriots stink, and I feel like this is the get-back game. I think that we get these unique, like every third game or every other game, you get this game from Josh Allen. You get that reminder game where you're like, oh, these could be them dudes. Like when they hit the fucking nitrous, they hit it. And I feel like this is the perfect game for that. I know usually majority of times we go, hey, in division game, it's going to be closer, in division game. No, this is different. The New England's really bad this year, criminally bad, maybe just as bad as the Giants, top bottom 3 team, if you will. And I think Buffalo just completely fucking exposes them. I think they win by 14, 17, 21 points. I think if the spread was 13.5, that's where I'd be like, oh, Jesus Christ, we got to respect Belichick. But 8.5 feels low. And I know Buffalo had a stinker of a game the other night, but here we are making excuses for them. They were coming back from London. Weird game, the travel. I'm telling you, Jess, that travel. You get that weird, you know, you recover.
You're going to have another, like, a crazy injury on the field for Buffalo, right?
Like, dude, I forgot to bring that up. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Okay, so during the ebb and flow of this game, it's weird as is. They clearly can't get it started. And then you have this fucking very bad injury. And this, I think, I tweeted about. Dude, this is a moment where you remember last year. This happened to Buffalo, and it took them like 4 or 5 games before they got their fucking swing back, before they really got and rightfully so. Like, there's got to be dudes in that locker room that are like, hey, man, this fucking game may not be worth it anymore. And I think that when you see that and you see Hamlin on the fucking sidelines and you see Hamlin on the fucking ambulance, and that's a bad look, by the way. Can we get those taken off? It stirs up those emotions again. And that was a motherfucker, let me tell you. Yeah. So if you were to tell me, and I don't think anyone would admit it, if any of those guys were to tell me, hey, man, that took us completely out of the fucking game. That flatlined our entire team, and there was no motivational speech that was going to bring us back after that. Fucking makes all the sense in the world. I completely get it. But with that said, they figured it out. They figured it out. And sometimes, Jess, just like with the Cowboys, some of these games, you're going to fucking figure them out. You know what I'm saying? Which is good news. All right, Jess. Let's keep it fucking moving here. We both like Buffalo. You don't like the points. I love the points. 1 o'clock games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games left. 6 games left. Short week. Let's fucking knock these out.
But there's one very sexy game in the.
I think you might think it's sexier than I do. Oh, actually, it is really sexy. I just looked under the hood. You're right. Okay. Arizona, 8, 7.5, 8. I'm going to keep it at 7.5. They're a dog. They're traveling to Seattle. I was buying a lot of Seattle stock last week, and I'm not saying I'm ready to sell it. But I'm a little bit sheepish. They are the favorite. They're at home, Jess. Who you got?
Here's the thing, man. I'm gonna let you know. Everything you've talked about Geno Smith has been on the money, bullseye type info. You know, he is the guy that he won't make mistakes. He is the guy that's not gonna he's also not going to take off for that 45, 50 yard, you know, run or hurdle guys or stiff arm dudes or make that razor thin in between two defenders, you know, pass.
No, but I want to say this, but Jess, he's got a great arm, but he is not, you're never going to get Brett Favre out of him.
Exactly.
You're never going to get, you know, Lamar Jackson, but he can make the throws. He can make the pro throws.
And last week,
and he's got stud receivers, which help as well.
That's true. Last week against Cincinnati, this is what you saw. You saw Geno Smith, who is very careful with the football. Yes, I believe that he had. I believe that there might have been an interception in there, but other than your off, you know, the norm type situation, Geno Smith was very accurate with the football. He was very stout with the football. He got rid of the football. But here's the thing. When the game is on the line, sometimes you need that Brett Favre. You need that Steve Young. You need that gunslinger who's going to take a chance and take that risk. Geno was afraid. I don't want to say afraid. I won't say that. Geno was unable to pull the trigger and take those risks to potentially win that football game. Instead, he took sacks. And if it's the first quarter, taking a sack is not a bad thing. Just don't fumble the ball, right? If you got to throw the football away, that's cool, man. In the first, second, third quarter, that's fine. In the fourth quarter, when you're close to being able to win a big football game, sometimes it helps immensely to have that gunslinging mentality quarterback who takes those risks and tries to win that football game. And Geno Smith just wasn't able to do that. He took the sacks. He threw the football away. He continued to attempt to be careful with the football, which is great. But nothing he did there towards the end was I'm gonna lead you guys down this field and we're gonna score a touchdown and win this game.
Well, Jess, here's the problem: it's having a game managing quarterback. It's all good when you're winning games 27-20, when you're winning games 23-17, but when it's 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, I'll keep going back to this instance. You don't want a game manager. This is where Garoppolo failed the Niners. This is where Geno Smith could potentially fail Seattle. Because when you need those big throws, when you need that dynamic quarterback play, I'm not sure that he's going to be the guy when you're, you know, when you need 4 points and not three with 2 minutes to go in a big pressure game. And they're going to be in those games if they're going to continue to win. So it's going to get interesting as the season progresses, Jess. I'm sorry, I didn't get your pick in that, by the way.
Who oh, yeah. So, again, this is not the Cincinnati Bengals. It's not the Eagles. It's not a top-ranked team. This is the Arizona Cardinals. They're on the road in Seattle. I think Seattle fans are going to be hype. 12th man up is going to be crazy. I like the Seahawks, and I like the points. I think the Seahawks win by 10, 11 points.
Yeah, Cardinals, and I've said it all year, they've been a sneaky – they stick around in games. I said this last week. They remind me of last year's Texans, where they stick around in games, but they find themselves on the losing end of all of them. I think we're going to get the same thing here. I do like the points, though. I think that Seattle pulls away late. I think this is like a 10, maybe a 13-point win for Seattle, because they tend to get a little ruckus at home, and they tend to get these big leads at home that they don't give up. So I like Seattle. I like the points. The sneaky Los Angeles Rams, who I see some people ranking in their top five, they're a 3-point favorite at home. The Pittsburgh Steelers are sneaking into town. There is going to be a lot of black and yellow at that game, Jess. I'll tell you right fucking now. Who you got?
Man, this is tough, man. This is a tough game. I definitely, you know what? I'm just going to go gut feeling says Rams win this game. Cause I still, I can't buy anything that's in Pittsburgh right now. Kenny Pickett is still Kenny Pickett. The offense is still the offense. The defense needs to play better. TJ Watt's about the only guy out on the field that actually matters in any game the Pittsburgh Steelers play. The offense hasn't figured out how to work within itself. And when you have a bad offense, sometimes it's only bad because you're trying to play like you're a good offense. Sometimes you need to dumb things down, you know what I mean? And I don't know if Tomlin can dumb it down. That's not the type of guy he is. And Kenny Pickett needs to be dumbed down. That playbook needs to be cut in half because Kenny is taking on way too much water right now.
They need to cut the playbook down to where can I throw to Pickens?
See, exactly. Where's Freiermuth and where's Pickens and how do I throw to those two guys? All right, cool. I need those six plays and I'm good.
Well, I got them to make it 12.
I got the Rams at home, and the points are 3 points. So I'd gladly take the three.
This is going to be one of those, I told you Tomlin is going to be bad this year games, where that offense is just going to have too many three and outs. That offense is not going to be able to stay on the field long enough, and the Rams are just going to have too many cracks at possessions. And I think this gets away from the Rams, or from the Steelers late. I think this is going to be something like 27-13 or 24-13. I love the Rams in this game. I love the points. The Los Angeles Chargers, they're on the road. They looked just as lost as always on Monday night playing my Cowboys. They are on the road. They are a 5.5-point dog. That feels low to me. Is Travis Kelce not playing? To the Kansas City Chiefs, Jess, who you got?
You know what's got to be more frustrating than being, say, a Buffalo Bills fan is being a Chargers fan. Because who are you? What's your identity? Are you a passing team? Are you a running team? Are you a defensive team? Like, and realistically, people, and I'm a Bills fan, so I see it more on my end. But I see a lot of people always just downgrade Josh Allen, like week in and week out. Oh, Josh Allen's not elite. Josh Allen's not this. I would rather have Caleb Williams than Josh Allen. I see this all day, right? But where's the malcontent for Justin Herbert? I mean, this guy can be.
I wasn't ready for this take. You fucked me up.
This guy can be hot as lava, and then the next play or two just look ice cold and shitty. And there was 4 or 5 throws last night or this last week that I was just like, what are you doing? Where are you throwing the ball? And to whom are you throwing the ball to? Like, what's the purpose of this? Justin Herbert does not get enough. He gets a lot of credit for the good things he does, and he deserves that. But he is also a starting quarterback in this league and a face of the NFL. There's you know, a few players that all represent the NFL, and I believe that Justin Herbert's one of those guys. So where's the hate? Where's his haters for when he makes those bad reads and he throws those bad picks and he makes those bad reads? I'm tired of them all picking on certain QBs. And it's not just Josh, but Justin Herbert is one of the darlings, and he just doesn't get a lot of hate. And I think that he deserves criticism when it's deserved.
This is such a great take, and I'm glad you went here, because I was going to try and figure out – I was trying to figure out where I was going to cram this in. Yeah, we all watched that Monday night game, and I tweeted it, and Troy Aikman even fucking said it out loud. It's the elephant in the room. Josh Herbert missed a lot of deep throws. He missed a lot of throws that were over 15 yards. He missed a lot of wide open targets. There was a pass that I believe he missed where the fucking defensive back got burned on his route and fell on his ass. Like, in a comical fashion, he spun. And I guarantee you, this is one of those things where they probably are laughing at it when they watch it on film. But if this dude catches this ball, if Herbert makes that throw, it's a fucking guaranteed touchdown. There were probably two or three of those guaranteed touchdowns where Herbert missed. There were probably another two or three 15 to 20 yard throws that would have been big chunk gains in crucial second and third downs. He just fucking missed them.
Yep.
Shout out my Chargers homie who said he believes Herbert's shoulder injury from last year never fully recovered, and he's just continued to throw through it, and now he's just always going to be fucked. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I tweeted it, and I truly believe this because I've been watching it for a while now. We get a lot of Chargers games out here, Jess. I believe the throws that he made 2 years ago, he's not fucking making them now. And that's the problem if you're a Chargers fan. What his best attribute was, I remember watching so many games against the Raiders, against the Broncos, against the Chiefs, where he was making incredible deep throws, 40 yards, 50 yards, 60 dimes. He's not doing that right now. That's a fucking problem. I didn't like a lot of what I saw out of the Chargers, and you hit the fucking nail on the head. What is their identity? It's not their coach. This guy's a fucking idiot. It's not their running game. It should be their defense. They've got fucking names everywhere. They gave the Cowboys fits. If they could have figured out a few more offensive sets there, they would have fucking beat us. The Cowboys were there to be beat. They just couldn't fucking put it together. With that said, I think Kansas City is fucking rolling right now. They're the team that nobody's talking about, that everybody knows is fucking good. They do this every year. It reminds me of the Patriots fucking 7-8 years ago when they had Brady and they were just expected to win 13, 14 games. They're going to roll the Chargers. I know in division game, I still think it gets away from the Chargers late. I like Kansas City. I love the points. I think they win by at least 7. Jess, let's jump to the next game, but Bowling Shoe Ugly. I'm not going to let you spend a lot of time on it.
I won't.
Green Bay 1.5. I'll stick with the 1. They're a 1-point favorite on the road. Sean Payton, you've beaten this guy with a pinata for 6 weeks. Let's make it 7. Denver's at home. They're a dog. Who you got?
Fire him. Let him go. Let him go.
Oh, God.
You know what? It's sad to see a franchise as storied as Denver come to this point where they basically bet the house on two individuals, and there's been absolutely no return on that spending spree. I got the Packers. I think the points were great. I think Packers win, you know, by 6, something like that. It's going to be Bowling Shoe Ugly. Neither team is really playing well. Just happens that Denver is really playing really bad. And I'm not even sure if the defense wants to be there anymore. I'm not saying players are giving up, but there's definitely not a lot of activity going on out there on the field. So I'm taking the Green Bay Packers.
There's a lot of doom and gloom when you lose X amount of games in a row. Just look bad. I think that's an issue. And I want to go Denver here. slight upset at home just because I don't trust Jordan Love. This could be, you know, hey, it's a mid-off, if you will. This could be a scenario where one who turns the ball over more? Does Green Bay turn the ball over 2-3 times and that ends up being the difference? Does Denver turn the ball over 2-3 times and that ends up being the difference? This could be a turnover turnover victory type of game. I lean towards Denver at home. I don't love this pick, and I hate both these teams. All right, Jess, we've got two sexy games here. I think one is a lot sexier than the other, so I'm going to leave it for the absolute end. I'm really calling an audible. Monday night, the San Francisco 49ers, fresh off a loss, they are banged up, Jess, and this is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. We've got some banged up teams that are considered good but could look vulnerable when you're this banged up. The Niners are a touchdown favorite across the board. They are in Minnesota. I want to say Minnesota spiraling, but then they win games. Jess, who you got?
Minnesota is probably the best mid football team I've ever seen in the past like 10 years. They've been that way for about 10 years.
You can't even say they're mid, Jess. They're above mid. It's just they always fall short of expectations.
Oh, it's crazy.
This is another team that really teases their team, their fans. They tickle that pickle.
Yes, it is. But depending on how injuries fall, and I hear from the 49er faithful that the CMC injury could be a little worse than what they're expecting it to be. If he misses this game, I'm telling you, MVP, literal MVP of the season right now, if my pick would be Christian McCaffrey. If I put that much on McCaffrey's back and he don't play, I'm not sure how the 49ers offense runs completely. And Purdy showed, I don't want to say that he was exposed, right? Because that makes me feel like all this time we've been hyping the guy up and talking about the good story and everything, that he's actually a lot worse. But it never hurts to have an all-star squad, right? Ask LeBron James. I mean, he's won titles off of that stuff. So when you're Brock Purdy and you're a decently accurate quarterback, and then you got all the playmakers in the world out there, it's easier to perform at a higher level. Start taking guys away, and it makes your game a little bit tougher. I don't think that the Niners are going to perform as well without McCaffrey, and we still have to wait to see what happens with Debo. If both those guys play, if neither of them play, I would be 100% Minnesota's camp. But right now, Minnesota is kind of faltering. I think this is a good bounce back game for Purdy, even on the road. I know it's going to be difficult. I don't expect it to get out of hand by any means, but San Francisco has just enough talent still left on the field, even if McCaffrey can't play, to at least get the dub against the Minnesota Vikings. Justin Jefferson is ready to get out. I'm telling you right now, his contract, when it's up, he's playing somewhere else. So, but in this game, San Francisco.
I think that Minnesota is going to fucking overpay Justin Jefferson. They're going
to
do.
They'll have to.
They're going to go to this guy and go, here, give us a list of QBs, a realistic list of QBs. Don't write Mahomes on here and walk away. Give us a realistic list of QBs that you'd like to fucking play with, and we're going to make an effort to get him here. Give us a fucking few names, and they're going to overpay him. He's going to get, you know, who's the highest paid receiver now? Is it still Dante? Whoever that is, he's getting fucking more. It's going to be a shitload up front guaranteed. They're going to do everything in their power to keep this fucking guy, just tell you right now. I like the Niners. I like the points. Even with them banged up, we finally got the Brock Purdy mama mid game. That's going to happen when you take away two of his playmakers. But I will say this, 49ers fans, you know it felt a little bit Garoppolo-y when you got late into that game and he couldn't make those fucking plays and he couldn't make those fucking throws. You can't tell me you didn't. And if you run into this problem Monday night where it's a three-point game and we're getting down to 5 minutes left, 3 minutes left, and Cousins is able to make a few throws and all of a sudden you're down, we could be walking into that same problem. They need Debo. They need their playmakers. They need Brock. How about remembering you got that Kittle guy there? How about throwing to that guy fucking maybe 3, 5, 7, 10 times? If they're taken away, if your playmakers are injured, because it is what it is, you got other studs, dude. Find them. He was not able to do that. I like the Niners. I like the points. I really think it's going to come down to the health of this team, but I still like them and I like the points. All right, Jeff, you were right. You nailed it. This game is, this is the sexiest game of the week. It's the Sunday night, 5 o'clock game. Clear the fucking schedule. Carve the pumpkins this night. Color in the pumpkins this night if you don't like carving because it's less messy. Philadelphia Eagles, 2-point favorite at home. They are playing the Miami Dolphins. Ooh, boy, this is a pick'em. I have not put any thought into this game, and I am already wanting to lean Miami. Jess, who you got?
I'm making this pick not being a Buffalo Bills fan. I'm making this pick of watching the Miami Dolphins over the past couple 3 years with Tua at the helm and Mike McDaniels at the helm as coach. They're able to beat all the good teams, but they can't beat the great teams. They lost to the Bills. I believe that Buffalo still is in that elite group of teams this season. And I believe definitely that the Philadelphia Eagles are almost at the top of that elite group. And I just don't think that the Miami Dolphins are going to be able to hang with that defense. I think that defense is going to do to Tua what Buffalo was able to do, get to him, disrupt him, knock him down, make him uncomfortable. That's the key to beating the Miami Dolphins. You have to disrupt their time. Everything the Miami Dolphins do is based on timing. Everything. Every route is timing. And you can say, well, that's the NFL. That's how you play football. No, with Miami, it's different. Their receivers are so fast that the plays have to be timed at just the most exact, precise moment. And I do believe that Tua is a good enough quarterback to deliver those passes. But here's the thing. You start knocking them around. You start making them uncomfortable. Start making them rethink where he's putting the ball. Then he makes mistakes. That's when he becomes turnover Tua. And then he loses the game. And I believe that Philadelphia's defense is nasty. They're big. They're strong. They're mean. They're fast. And even the secondary can lay some molly whoppers on people. So I'm going to go Philadelphia at home. Give me the points. I don't think it's going to be a huge game. I think it'll be kind of close all the way up to about probably the third quarter. You're looking at like, I don't know, maybe like a 27-21 win, something like that. I think it'll be closer than people think. Yep. But I'm taking Philly at home.
This has the stewings, the brewings of a first to 30 wins. This could get fun. Really depends on if those offenses can click on those defenses. Man, I want to lean Miami. This is once again my gut telling me go Miami, but I've watched so much Philly, and I know they stunk the other day against New York, but New York's defense, when they're playing
on leads.
And I've been saying that all season. Yeah. When they're clicking, dude, they're tough to beat. And Hurts had a shitty game. Like, he just turned the ball over. Bad throws. Very very unlike him, if you will. The usual football IQ that he's shown, you know, in those dominant wins that he's had the last 2 years, it just disappeared. I think he turns it around. I think they turn it around. I'm leaning Philly here. I like Philly by 3 or 4, but man, it would not surprise me at all if Miami fucks around and steals this game. And this is another argument for, see, Miami's elite. Miami's the best team in the league. They beat Philly.
If Miami beats Philly on the road, I will put them as the number one. Matter of fact, just this morning, I believe I tweeted out, because our friends and colleagues over at Variety Sports Network, they put out a top 10 list.
Yeah, I believe... wanted to disagree with it, by the way, because the Lions, they had the Lions higher than, I think, Buffalo, right?
Yeah, I think the Lions.
But they have a better record. I think they have a better record. That's the motherfucking thing right there, that record, because I almost feel like you can make an argument there's two or three teams better than the Lions and the AFC, but that record, you're always going to go back to that record.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
Those heavyweights are going to beat up on each other.
But here's the thing. I believe they had San Francisco number one still, even after their loss. And I believe that they had Miami number two. And I said, swap San Francisco for Miami, then your top 10 list is looking pretty legit. Because I do believe that right now, firmly speaking, the Miami Dolphins are the best team in football. Wow. Their offense is playing the best.
And you're
their
picking against them.
Their quarterback is playing the best. And the only thing that I can see derailing them is when Tua's got to play those big must-win games. He doesn't win big must-win games. He's not a big-game quarterback. He's not been over his career. It could change. We're seeing things change in Miami right now before our very own eyes. Maybe this game against Philly is when he takes that turn, that next step up, right? But until he does, I can't say that Miami's going to win those big games with Tua at the quarterback. I think that Jalen Hurts will put on a little bit of a show. That running game is going to be hard to stop. Miami's defense is not great at all. They're good. They're not great. Philly has a great defense.
Yeah.
Along with a great offense, and that's going to be the turning point for Philly.
I love your take. I think if they can disrupt Miami's offense and get them out of that fluidity, which we saw Buffalo do, and we know that front line can do it. The stewings and the brewings of a long day for Tua are there. Or he just hits Tyreek a bunch of times and Tyreek has 200 yards, 2 touchdowns, and fucking 8 catches because he's an unstoppable freak that'll do a flip in the end zone on your ass and a selfie at the same time.
With the cell phone? Come on, man. I am not a Tyreek guy at all, but that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
That's up there. That's up there. They put it right next to the Joe Horn taking the cell phone out of the fucking out of the piece of the end zone. All right, Jess, that's it. We hit it. Hit the wrap it up button. 90 minutes.
You call all right, us. Folks. You had to listen to us for a long time. Hopefully we made sense and some enjoyable moments for you. Thank you for listening. Old and new listeners apiece. Everybody that shouts us out on Twitter, we appreciate you all. Variety
Love
Sports
y'all.
Networks, Fadeaway, Fat Boy Fadeaway Sports, Justin Von Doom, who was just on the show last week, Smash Squad MMA. Thank you for always shouting us out and saying such cool, kind things and listening to
thank
us while you go
retweets.
And do your workout, while you're getting your swollen out of control on. We appreciate you. Shay Rollins, XYTDs, our boy Chris, and anybody else that messes
Ooh.
Around with us.
Let me shout out Julia from the – is it Julia that's in our fantasy basketball league?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bro, she's been kicking my ass for like 5, 6, 7 years. As long as we've been doing this league, she's been whooping my ass. And we do this fantasy basketball draft, and who do I see? Fucking Julia, once again, snaking the picks in my little queue. And I'm like, this girl's has been whooping my ass for so many years of this fantasy basketball. Shout out, Julie. All right, Jess, hit the wrap it up button.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the weekend and all the fights and football games. Because you know we will.